Welcome to Talos Takes, the security podcast for everyone from the C-suite to the front lines. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Talos Takes. This is John Munshaw, joined by Nick Biasini from Talos Outreach. Thanks for coming on, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, John. Glad to be here.
So today we're going to be talking about the term passive security and why it may not necessarily be the best approach for organizations looking to stop threats to their network and data. This is a topic that you just wrote about for the Talos blog, and you and Wendy Nather were also interviewed on the topic for an article in SDX Central that I'll link to in the show notes. But for starters, let's just kind of define the term passive security in this context and how it might differ from active blocking, which is kind of like the other term that you use in the blog post.
Yeah, so it's kind of a broad term. At its core, what it basically means is you aren't taking active steps against whatever security technologies you have out there. So at like a basic example, you're running AV or EDR on your endpoint. It does a detection for a malicious file, doesn't actually quarantine or block that malicious file. It just generates an alert. Or you're running a network IPS. It detects something on the wire, doesn't actually block what's going on, just generates an alert. Those are at its core is kind of the idea behind active and passive security. There are obviously much more thorough stages of active security. You can take active remediation for incidents. You can quarantine people. You can use technologies like ICE to change their groups to reduce their access. There's lots of things that you can do are active, but at its core, the idea is you need to block the things that are going on in security because you don't have enough time to respond to passive alerts.
Yeah. So what are some other pitfalls then of using this approach? Because as you mentioned in the blog, this is something that we're seeing often in IR engagements where attackers are able to gain an initial foothold onto a targeted network because they're able to bypass these security protections. Because essentially, like, they're the same kinds of things that adversaries have been looking at for years now. So at this point, they kind of know what they're dealing with.
Yeah, and this is actually one of the things that inspired me to write this post is I kept seeing this in incident response engagements where you would see adversary enters environment, the victim has technology in place, alerts are generated for the activity that they're doing, and then they continue on and end up having a huge ransomware incident because of it. Because those alerts weren't actioned in time, and since they weren't being actively implemented, all it did was generate an alert. It wasn't really an impediment to the adversary at all.
So that's essentially how they're getting around it. Then the tactic that the adversary is using is basically they like know that it's going to generate an alert, but don't really care.
Yeah, the adversary has no idea what's going on in the background. They honestly, I mean, the only way that they would know is if things started disappearing. Like if they dropped tooling and the tooling disappeared, they would know that there was something potentially going on. But in this instance, it's largely invisible to them because the alerts that are being generated are being sent off to whatever security system or solution that you have running.
Are there any other ways that attackers are adapting to passive security? Because that's, again, like I said, that's kind of what they're used to seeing at this point.
It's not, they just take advantage of it. Real issue here is not necessarily what the actors are doing. It's more that defenders need to change their approach to security. And the best parallel to this is enterprise patching. So if you go back years ago, enterprise patching, like in environments I've been in, enterprise patching is not something that we did. Or if we did do it, it was something that you did very sparingly in very specific circumstances. You flash forward to today and patches are being applied on endpoints as soon as they roll out. You're seeing this like very broad acceptance of doing patch rollouts in regular intervals and being open to doing patching. This is the same argument that is made in the passive security space because years ago, security would block something and it would cause an operational issue. So the discussion is always, we can't block actively because it'll cause an issue in production. That argument doesn't stand up anymore. You're potentially facing millions and millions of dollars in damages if you aren't running your security actively. It's definitely a mindset shift that organizations at least need to start down the path of. Like I said before, there's different layers to this, but start basic. Turn your EDR into active blocking. Start working on making sure that you're running your IPS in IPS mode and not IDS mode. doing those basic steps gives you the foothold to start doing more aggressive, active things as you get better at what you're doing.
And the counter argument that Wendy Nather made in that article that I referenced, the way that was kind of laid out is that you guys were having a debate, but I don't necessarily think it was a debate per se. It was just kind of like Wendy was kind of playing a devil's advocate to this particular talking point. And something that she said is that it's not always feasible to use active blocking because teams may be limited by their monetary budget or the amount of time they have available, or literally just like the amount of members that they have on their IT team, like how many people work for you. So what are some of the cases where passive security might be best or are frankly like the only option for certain organizations?
So I push back on never implementing active security because I just don't agree with that.
Right.
I could see you applying passive security in very specific circumstances. Like you have very critical assets that if something is blocked or something happens, your business ceases to operate. There are other compensating controls you can put in place around that. But across the board in 2024, there is no place to be running 100% passively anymore. If you do that, you're going to regret it at some point. And if you really, really want to stay in that space, you need to make abundantly clear to your leadership and to the C-level what the risks you are introducing by doing that are, so that they are very keenly aware. The last thing you want to have happen is have a multi-million dollar incident happen and them ask you, why didn't you block this?
Right.
You want to make sure that you've made it very clear that you want to, but here are the reasons why we can't. So when this happens, you're covered.
And if you are one of those places that you know, maybe you're listening to this, you're reading the blog and you think, oh, I might actually be relying too much on passive security, or, oh, this is how I have it set up in our environment. What are kind of a handful of things that defenders or admins might be able to start doing to be more active in their approach?
The first and foremost thing is when you're configuring security devices, at least start looking at how to configure them to do active blocking. I understand that there are potential roadblocks in the way. Start rolling it out slowly. Take a single department, a handful of respective machines. Start proving that there isn't a big negative impact to doing this, because that is the only way you're going to be able to start to prove and push everyone in management and everyone else along. And I've done this with patching in the past. It absolutely works. Start with a small group of machines, put them in active security, show that there are no negative impacts, slowly start expanding that footprint and proving that you can do this work. In the end, you'll have a much better security posture than where you start.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks as always for your time, Nick. I appreciate your insight and expertise as always, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.